down on his bed. The mattress was barely bigger than a twin, and even though the comforter was made of stiff denim, and the mattress probably had potato chip crumbs in the cracks, Arya had never felt anything so perfect in her life. Arya was still on the bed, staring up at a crack in the ceiling. The streetlight outside the window cast long shadows across everything, turning Arya's bare skin a weird shade of pink. A stiff, chilly breeze from the open window blew out the sandalwood candle next to the bed. She heard Ezra turn on the faucet in the bathroom. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. She felt alive. She and Ezra had nearly had sex. But then, at exactly the same time, they'd agreed that they should wait. So then they'd snuggled up to each other, naked, and started to talk. Ezra told her about the time he was six and sculpted a red squirrel out of clay, only to have his brother squash it. How he used to smoke a lot of pot after his parents got divorced. About the time he had to take the family's fox terrier to the vet to have her put to sleep. Arya told him about how when she was little, she kept a can of split pea soup named Pea as a pet and cried when her mom tried to cook pea for dinner. She told him about her furious knitting habit and promised to knit him a sweater. It was easy to talk to Ezra, so easy she could imagine doing it forever. They could travel together to faraway places. Brazil would be amazing. They could sleep in a tree and eat nothing but plantains and write plays for the rest of their lives. Her trio beeped. Ugh, it was probably Noel, wondering what happened to her. She hugged one of Ezra's pillows close to her. It smelled just like him, and waited for him to come out of the bathroom and kiss her some more. Then it beeped again, and again, and again. Jesus, Arya groaned, leaning her naked body off the bed to pull it out of her bag. 7 new text messages. More kept beeping in. Opening her inbox, Arya frowned. The messages all had the same title, Student-Teacher Conference. Her stomach turned as she opened the first one. Arya, that's some kind of extra credit. Love ya, A. P.S. Wonder what your mom would think if she found out about your dad's little, study buddy. And that you knew. Arya read the next text message, and the next, and the next. All the messages said the same thing. She dropped the trio on the floor. She had to sit down. No, she had to get out of here. Ezra? She frantically peered out Ezra's windows. Was she watching, right this second? What did she want? Was it really her? Ezra, I have to go. It's an emergency.
What? Ezra called from behind the bathroom door. You're leaving?
Arya couldn't quite believe it either. She yanked her shirt over her head. I'll call you, okay? I just have to go do something.
Wait, what?
He asked, opening the bathroom door. Arya grabbed her bag and tore out the door and across the yard. She needed to get away. Now. 24. There's more than just shoes and jeans in Spencer's closet. The limit of X is... Spencer murmured to herself. She propped herself up on one elbow on her bed and stared at her brand new, just covered with a brown bag calculus book. Her lower back still burned with icy hot. She checked her watch. It was after midnight. Was she crazy to stress over her calc homework on the school year's first Friday night? The Spencer of last year would have whizzed over to the cons in her Mercedes, drunk bad keg beer, and maybe made out with Mason Byers or some other cute lax boy. But not the Spencer of now. She was the star, and the star had homework to do. Tomorrow, the star was visiting home design stores with her mom to properly accessorize the barn. She might even hit mainline bikes with her dad in the afternoon. He'd pored over some bicycling catalogs with her during dinner, asking her which Orbea frame she liked better. He'd never asked her opinion about bikes before. She cocked her head. Was that a tiny, tentative knock at the door? Putting down her mechanical pencil, Spencer gazed out the barn's large front window. The moon was silvery and full, and the windows of the main house blazed a warm yellow. There was the knock again. She padded over to the heavy wooden door and opened it a crack.
"Hey," Wren whispered. "Am I interrupting?"
"Of course not." Spencer opened the door wider. Wren was barefoot, in a slim-fitting white t-shirt that said, "University of Pennsylvania Medical," and baggy khaki shorts. She looked down at her black French Connection baby tee, short Trackstar gray sweat shorts from Villanova, and bare legs. Her hair was pulled back in a low, messy ponytail, wisps hanging around her face. It was a completely different look from her everyday Thomas Pink striped button-down and citizen's jeans. That look said, "I'm sophisticated and sexy." This look said, "I'm studying, but still sexy." Okay, so maybe she'd planned for the off chance this would happen. But it goes to show, you shouldn't just throw on your high-waisted underwear and old ratty I Heart Persian Cats t-shirt.
"How's it going?" she asked.
A warm breeze lifted the wispy ends of her hair. A pine cone fell out of a nearby tree with a thump. Wren hovered in the doorway.
"Shouldn't you be out partying? I heard there was a huge field party somewhere."
Spencer shrugged. "Not into it." Wren met her eyes.
"No?"
Spencer's mouth felt cottony.
Where's Melissa?"
"She's sleeping. Too much renovating, I guess. So I thought maybe you could give me a tour of this fabulous barn I don't get to live in. I never even got to see it."
Spencer frowned.
"Do you have a housewarming gift?"
Wren paled.
I'm kidding." She opened the door. "Enter the Spencer Hastings barn." She'd spent some of the night daydreaming about all the potential scenarios of being alone with Wren, but nothing compared to actually having him right here, next to her. Wren strolled over to her Tom York poster and stretched his hands behind his head.
"You like Radiohead?"
"Love." Wren's face lit up.
"I've seen them like 20 times in London. Every show gets better."
She smoothed down the duvet on her bed.
"Lucky, I've never seen them live."
"We have to remedy that," he said, leaning against her couch.
"If they come to Philly, we're going."
Spencer paused. "But I don't think..." Then she stopped. She was about to say, "I don't think Melissa likes them," but maybe Melissa wasn't invited. She led him to the walk-in closet. "This is my, closet," she said, accidentally bumping into the door jamb. "It used to be a milking station."
"Oh, yeah?"
"Yep. This is where the farmer squeezed the cow's nipples or whatever." He laughed.
"Don't you mean udders?"
"Ah, yeah." Spencer blushed. "Oops. You don't have to look in there to be polite. I know closets aren't that interesting to guys."
"Oh, no,"
Wren grinned. "I've come all this way. I absolutely want to see what Spencer Hastings has in her closet."
"As you wish."
Spencer flicked on the closet light. The closet smelled like leather, mothballs, and Clinique happy. She'd stashed all her undies, bras, nightgowns, and grubby hockey clothes in wicker pull-out baskets, and her shirts hung in neat rows, arranged according to color. Wren chuckled.
"It's like being in a shop."
"Yeah," Spencer said bashfully, running her hands against her shirts.
"I've never heard of a window in a closet."
Wren pointed to the open window on the far wall.
"Seems funny."
"It was part of the original barn," Spencer explained.
"You like people watching you naked?"
"There are blinds," Spencer said.
"Too bad," Wren said softly.
"You looked so beautiful in the bathroom. I hoped I'd get to see you like that again." When Spencer whirled around,
"What did he just say?"
Wren was staring at her. He rubbed his fingers over the cuff of a hung-up pair of Joseph trousers.
She slid her Tiffany Elsa Peretti heart ring up and down her finger, afraid to speak. Ren took a step forward, then another, until he was right next to her. Spencer could see the light smattering of freckles over his nose. The well-behaved Spencer of a parallel universe would have ducked around him and shown him the rest of the barn. But Ren kept staring at her with his huge, gorgeous brown eyes. The Spencer who was here now rubbed her lips together, afraid to speak, yet dying to do something. So then she did. She closed her eyes, reached up, and kissed him right on the lips. Ren didn't hesitate. He kissed her back, then held on to the back of her neck and kissed her harder. His mouth was soft, and he tasted a tiny bit like cigarettes. Spencer sank back into her wall of shirts. Ren followed. A few slipped off the hangers, but Spencer didn't care. They sank down onto the soft, carpeted floor. Spencer kicked her field hockey cleats out of the way. Ren rolled on top of her, groaning slightly. Spencer grabbed fistfuls of his worn t-shirt in her hands and pulled it over his head. He took hers off next and ran his feet up and down her legs. They rolled over, and now Spencer was on top of him. A huge, overwhelming surge of, well, she didn't know what, overcame her. Whatever it was so intense it didn't occur to her to feel guilty. She paused over him, breathing hard. He reached up and kissed her again, then kissed her nose and her neck. Then he pushed himself up. "I'll be right back." "Why?" He motioned his eyes to his left, the direction of her bathroom. As soon as she heard Ren shut the door, Spencer threw her head back onto the floor and stared dizzily up at her clothes. Then she scrambled up and examined herself in the three-way mirror. Her hair had come out of its ponytail and cascaded over her shoulders. Her bare skin looked luminous, and her face was slightly flushed. She grinned at the three Spencers in the mirror. This was unbelievable. That was when the reflection of her computer screen, directly opposite her closet, caught her eye. It was flashing. She turned around and squinted. It looked like she had hundreds of instant messages, piled one on top of the other. Another IM popped up on the screen, this time written in 72-point font. Spencer blinked. A-A-A-A-A-A. I already told you. Kissing your sister's boyfriend is wrong. Spencer ran up to her computer screen and read the IM again. She turned and glanced toward the bathroom. A tiny strip of light shone from underneath the door. A was definitely not Andrew Campbell. When she kissed Ian back in seventh grade, she told Allison about it, hoping for some advice. Allie examined her French manicured toenails for a long moment before she finally said, "You know, I've been in your corner when it comes to Melissa, but this is different. I think you should tell her." "Tell her?" Spencer shot back. "No way. She'd kill me." "What, do you think Ian's going to go out with you?" Allie said nastily. "I don't know," Spencer said. "Why not?" Allie snorted. "If you don't tell her, maybe I will." "No, you won't." "Oh, yeah?" "If you tell Melissa," Spencer said after a moment, her heart pounding wildly, "I'll tell everyone about the Jenna thing," Allie said nastily. "I don't know," Spencer said. "Why not?" Allie snorted. "If you don't tell her, maybe I will." "No, you won't." "Oh, yeah?" "If you tell Melissa," Spencer said after a moment, her heart pounding wildly, "I'll tell everyone about the Jenna thing." Allie barked out a laugh. "You're just as guilty as I am." Spencer stared at Allie long and hard. "But no one saw me." She turned to Spencer and gave her a fierce, angry look, scarier than any look she'd ever given any of the girls before. "You know I took care of that." Then there was that sleepover in the barn on the last day of seventh grade. When Allie said how cute Ian and Melissa were together, Spencer realized Allie really might tell on her. Then, strangely, a light, free feeling swept over her. Let her, Spencer thought. She suddenly didn't care anymore, and even though it sounded horrible to say now, the truth was, Spencer wanted to be free of Allie, right then and there. Now Spencer felt nauseous. She heard the toilet flush. Wren strode out and stood in the closet's doorway. Now, where were we? He cooed. But Spencer still had her eyes on her computer screen. Something on it, a flicker of red, just moved. It looked like a reflection. What's the matter? Wren asked. Shh, Spencer said. Her eyes focused. It was a reflection. She spun around. There was someone outside her window. Holy shit, Spencer said. She held her t-shirt up against her naked chest. What is it? Wren asked. Spencer stepped back. Her throat was dry. Oh, she croaked. Oh, Wren echoed. Melissa stood outside the window, her hair messy and Medusa-like, her face absolutely expressionless. A cigarette shook in her tiny, usually steady fingers. I didn't know you smoked, Spencer finally said. Melissa didn't answer. Instead, she took one more drag, threw the butt in the dewy grass, and turned back toward the main house. You coming, Wren? Melissa called frostily over her shoulder. 25. Student drivers these days. Mona's mouth dropped open when she came around the corner to Noel's front lawn. Holy shit! Hannah leaned out the window of Sean's father's BMW and grinned at Mona. You love it? Mona's eyes lit up. I'm speechless. Hannah smiled gratefully and took a swig from the Kettle One bottle she'd swiped from the booze table. 2 minutes ago, she'd texted Mona a picture of the BMW with the message, I'm all lubed up and out front. Come ride me. Mona opened the heavy passenger door and slid into the seat. She leaned over and stared intensely at the BMW insignia on the steering wheel. It's so beautiful. She traced the little blue and white triangles with her pinky. Hannah flicked her hand off. Get stoned much? Mona raised her chin and appraised Hannah's dirty hair, crooked dress, and tear-stained face. Things didn't go well with Sean. Hannah looked down and jammed the key into the ignition. Mona moved to hug her. Oh, Han, I'm sorry. What happened? Nothing, whatever. Hannah jerked away and put on her sunglasses, which made it a little hard to see, but who cared, and started the car. It burst into action, all of the BMW's dashboard lights switching on. Pretty, Mona cried. It's like the lights at Club Shampoo. Hannah slammed the gear into reverse and the tires rolled through the thick grass. Then she jerked it into drive, cut the wheel, and off they went. Hannah was too keyed up to worry about the fact that the double lines on the road were quadrupling in her vision. Yee-haw! Mona whooped. She rolled down the window to let her long blonde hair flutter behind her. Hannah lit a parliament and swiveled the Sirius radio dial until she found a retro rap station playing Baby Got Back. She turned the volume up and the cabin throbbed. Of course the car had the best bass money could buy. That's more like it, Mona said. Hells yeah, Hannah answered. As she navigated a sharp turn a little too quickly, something in the back of her mind made a ping. It's not gonna be you. Ouch. Even Daddy doesn't love you best. Double ouch. Well, fuck it. Hannah pressed down on the gas and nearly took out someone's dog-shaped mailbox. We've got to go somewhere and show this bitch off. Mona put her Mew Mew heels up on the dashboard, smearing bits of grass and dirt on it. How about Wawa? I'm jonesing for some tasty cake. Hannah giggled and took another swig of Kettle One. Hugh must be super baked. I'm not just baked, I'm broiled. They parked crookedly in the Wawa lot and sang, I like big butts, and I cannot lie, as they stumbled into the store. A couple of grubby delivery guys, holding 64-ounce cups of coffee and leaning against their trucks, stared with their mouths open.
Can I have your hat? Mona asked the skinnier of the two, pointing to his mesh ball cap that said, Wawa Farms.
Without a word, the guy gave it to her.
Ew, Hannah whispered. That thing is germy.
But Mona had already put it on her head. In the store, Mona bought 16 Tasty Cake butterscotch crimpets, a copy of Us Weekly, and a huge bottle of Tahitian treat. Hannah bought a Tootsie Pop for 10 cents. When Mona wasn't looking, she shoved a Snickers and a pack of M&Ms into her purse.
I can hear the car, Mona said dreamily as they paid. It's screaming.
It was true. In her drunken haze, Hannah had activated the alarm on the keychain.
Oops, she giggled.
Hooting with laughter, they ran back to the car and slid inside. They stopped at a red light, heads bobbing. The supermarket strip mall to their left was empty, except for some loose shopping carts. The store's neon signs glowed vacantly. Even the Outback Steakhouse bar was dead.
People in Rosewood are such losers, Hannah gestured to the darkness.
The highway was barren, too, so Hannah let out a startled eep when a car stealthily rolled up in the lane next to her. It was a silver, pointy-nosed Porsche with tinted windows and those creepy blue headlights.
Check that out, Mona said, crimpet crumbs falling out of her mouth.
As they stared, the car revved its engine.
It wants to race, Mona whispered.
Bull, Hannah answered. She couldn't make out who was inside the car, only the red, glowing tip of a lit cigarette. An uneasy feeling washed over her. The car revved its engine again, impatiently this time, and she could finally see a vague outline of the driver. He revved his engine again. Hannah raised an eyebrow at Mona, feeling drunk, hyped, and completely invincible.
Do it, Mona whispered, pulling down the brim of the Wawa milk hat.
Hannah swallowed hard. The light turned green. As Hannah hit the gas, the car launched forward. The Porsche growled ahead of her.
You pussy, don't let him beat you, Mona cried.
Hannah stepped down on the gas pedal and the engine roared. She pulled alongside the Porsche. They were doing 80, then 90, then 100. Driving this fast felt better than stealing.
Kick his ass, Mona screamed.
Heart pounding, Hannah pressed the pedal to the floor. She could hardly hear what Mona was saying over the engine noise. As they rounded a turn, a deer stepped into their lane. It came out of nowhere.
Shit, Hannah screamed.
The deer stood dumbly still. She gripped the wheel tightly, hit the brakes, and swerved right, and the deer jumped out of the way. Quickly, she wrenched the wheel to straighten it out, but the car began to skid. The tires caught on a patch of gravel on the side of the road, and suddenly, they were spinning. The car spun around and around, and then they hit something. All at once, there was a crunch, splintering glass, and darkness. A split second later, the only sound in the car was a vigorous hissing noise from under the hood. Slowly, Hannah felt her face. It was okay. Nothing had hit it. And her legs could move. She pushed herself up through a bunch of folded, puffy fabric. The airbag. She checked on Mona. Her long legs kicked wildly from behind her airbag. Hannah wiped tears from the corners of her eyes.
You okay? Get this thing off me!
Hannah got out of the car and then pulled Mona out. They stood on the side of the highway, breathing hard. Across the street were the SEPTA tracks and the dark Rosewood station. They could see far up the highway. There was no sign of the Porsche, or the deer that they'd missed. Ahead of them, the stoplight swung, turning from yellow to red.
That was something, Mona said, her voice quivering.
Hannah nodded.
You sure you're all right?
She looked at the car. The whole front end had crumpled into a telephone pole. The bumper hung off the car, touching the ground. One of the headlights had twisted around to a crooked angle. The other flashed crazily. Stinky steam poured out of the hood.
You don't think it's gonna blow up, do you?
Mona asked. Hannah giggled. This shouldn't have been funny, but it was.
What should we do?
We should bolt, Mona said. We can walk home from here. Hannah swallowed more giggles.
Oh my God, Sean's gonna shit.
Then both girls started to laugh. Hiccuping, Hannah turned around on the empty road and spread her arms out. There was something empowering about standing in the middle of an empty four-lane highway. She felt like she owned Rosewood. She also felt like she was spinning, but maybe that was because she was still wasted. She tossed the keyring next to the car. It hit the pavement hard, and the alarm started wailing again. Hannah quickly bent down and hit the deactivate button. The alarm stopped.
Does it have to be so loud? She complained.
Totally. Mona put her sunglasses back on. Sean's dad should really get that fixed. 26. Do you love me? Yes or no? The grandfather clock in the hall rang at 9 a.m. on Saturday morning as Emily padded quietly down the stairs to the kitchen. She never got up this early on the weekends, but this morning she couldn't sleep. Someone had made coffee, and there were sticky buns sitting out on a chicken print plate on the table. It looked as if her parents had gone out for their never-fail, rain-or-shine, Saturday crack-of-dawn walk. If they did their two loops around the neighborhood, Emily could get out of here without anybody noticing. Last night, after Ben caught her and Maya in the photo booth, Emily had bolted from the party, without saying goodbye to Maya. Emily had called Carolyn, who was at Applebee's, and asked for a ride pronto. Carolyn and Topher, her boyfriend, came, no questions asked, although her sister gave Emily, who stank of whiskey, a stern, parental look when she climbed in the back seat. At home, she'd hidden under her covers so she wouldn't have to talk to Carolyn and dropped off into a deep sleep. But this morning, she felt worse than ever. She didn't know what to think about what happened at the party. It was all a blur. She wanted to believe that kissing Maya had been a mistake, and that she could explain everything to Ben and it would be okay. But Emily kept returning to how everything felt. It was like, before last night, she'd never been kissed before. But there was nothing, nothing about Emily that said lesbian. She bought girly hot oil treatments for her chlorine-damaged hair. She had a poster of the hot Australian swimmer Ian Thorpe on her wall. She giggled with the other swimmer girls about the boys in their Speedos. She'd only kissed one other girl, years ago, and that didn't count. Even if it did, it didn't mean anything, right? She broke a Danish in half and stuffed a piece in her mouth. Her head throbbed. She wanted things to go back to the way they were. To throw a fresh towel in her duffel and head to practice. To happily make goofy pig faces into someone's digital camera on the away meet bus. To be content with herself and her life and to not be an emotional yo-yo. So that was it. Maya was awesome and all, but they were just confused and sad for their own reasons, but not gay, right? She needed some air. It was desolate outside. The birds were chirping noisily, and someone's dog kept barking, but everything was still. Freshly delivered papers were still waiting on front lawns, wrapped in blue plastic. Her old, red Trek mountain bike was propped up against the side of the tool shed. Emily jerked it upright, hoping she'd be coordinated enough to handle a bike after last night's whiskey. She pushed off to the street, but her bike's front wheel made a flapping noise. Emily bent down. There was something caught in the wheel. A piece of notebook paper was woven through the spokes. She pulled it out and read a few lines. Wait, this was her own handwriting.
I love staring at the back of your head in class. I love how you chew gum whenever we're talking on the phone together. And I love that when you jiggle your Skechers during class when Mrs. Hat starts talking about famous American court cases, I know you're totally bored.
Emily's eyes darted around her empty front yard. Was this what she thought it was? She nervously skimmed down to the bottom, her mouth dry.
And I've done a lot of thinking about why I kissed you the other day. I realized it wasn't a joke, Allie. I think I love you. I can understand if you never want to speak to me again, but I just had to tell you. M.
There was something else written on the other side of the paper. She flipped it over. Thought you might want this back. Love, A. Emily let her bike clatter to the ground. This was the letter to Allie, the very one Emily had sent right after the kiss, the one she'd wondered if Allie had ever gotten. Calm down, Emily told herself, realizing her hands were trembling. There's a logical explanation for this. It had to be Maya. She lived in Allie's old room. Emily had told Maya about Allison and the letter last night. Maybe she was just giving it back. But then, love A. Maya wouldn't write that. Emily didn't know what to do or who to talk to. Suddenly, she thought of Aria. So much had happened last night after Emily ran into her, she'd forgotten their conversation. What had all Aria's bizarre Allison questions been about? And there was something about her expression last night. Aria seemed nervous. Emily sat on the ground and looked at the "thought you might want this back" message again. If Emily recalled correctly, Aria had spiky handwriting that looked a lot like this. In the last days before Allie had gone missing, she'd held the kiss over Emily's head, forcing Emily to go along with whatever she wanted to do. It hadn't occurred to Emily that maybe Allie had told the rest of their friends. But maybe... Honey? Emily jumped. Her parents stood above her, dressed in sensible white sneakers, high-waisted shorts, and preppy pastel golf shirts. Her father had a red fanny pack, and her mom swung turquoise arm weights back and forth. Hey, Emily croaked. Going for a bike ride? Her mother asked. Uh-huh. You're supposed to be grounded. Her father put on his glasses, as if he needed to see Emily to scold her. We only let you out last night because you were going with Ben. We hoped he'd get through to you, but bike rides are off limits.
Well, Emily groaned, standing up. If only she didn't have to explain things to her parents. But then, whatever. She wouldn't. Not now. She threw her leg over the bar and sat on her seat. I have somewhere to go, she mumbled, pedaling down the driveway.
Emily, come back here, her father yelled gruffly.
But Emily, for the first time in her life, just kept pedaling. 27. Don't mind me, I'm just dead. Aria awoke to her doorbell ringing. Except it wasn't her family's normal doorbell chime. It was American Idiot by Green Day. Huh. When had her parents changed that? She threw back her duvet, slid on the blue-flowered, fur-lined clog she bought in Amsterdam, and clomped down the spiral staircase to see who it was. When she opened the door, she gasped. It was Allison. She was taller, and her blonde hair was cut in long, shaggy layers. Her face looked more glamorous and angular than it had in seventh grade. Ta-da! Allie grinned and spread out her arms. I'm back! Holy! Aria choked on her words, blinking furiously a couple of times. What? Where have you been? Allie rolled her eyes. My stupid parents, she said. Remember my Aunt Camille? The really cool one who was born in France and married my Uncle Jeff when we were in seventh? I went to visit her in Miami that summer.
Then, I liked it so much that I just stayed. I totally told my parents about all of it, but I guess they forgot to tell everyone else. Aria rubbed her eyes.
So, wait, you've been in Miami? You're okay?
Allie twirled around a little. I look more than okay, don't I? Hey, did you like my texts?
Aria's smile faded. No, actually.
Allie looked hurt. Why not? That one about your mom was so funny.
Aria stared at her.
God, you're sensitive.
Allie narrowed her eyes.
Are you going to blow me off again?
Wait, what?
Aria stammered.
Allison gave Aria a long look, and a black, gelatinous substance began dripping out of her nostrils.
I told the others, you know, about your dad. I told them everything.
Your nose,
Aria pointed. Suddenly it started seeping out of Allie's eyeballs, like she was crying oil. It was dripping from her fingernails, too.
Oh, I'm just rotting, Allie smiled.
Aria jerked up in bed. Sweat drenched the back of her neck. The sun streamed in through her window, and she heard American Idiot on her brother's stereo next door. She checked her hands for black goo, but they were squeaky clean.
Whoa. Morning, honey.
Aria staggered down her spiral staircase to see her father, dressed only in thin, tartan plaid boxer shorts and a sleeveless t-shirt, reading the Philadelphia Inquirer.
Hey, she murmured back.
Shuffling to the espresso machine, she stared for a long time at her father's pale, randomly hairy shoulders. He jiggled his feet and made hmm noises at the paper.
Dad?
Her voice cracked slightly.
Hmm?
Aria leaned against the stone-topped island.
Can ghosts send text messages?
Her father looked up, surprised and confused.
What's a text message?
She stuck her hand into an open box of frosted mini-wheats and pulled out a handful.
Never mind.
You sure?
Byron asked. She chewed nervously. What did she want to ask? Is a ghost sending me texts? But come on, she knew better. Anyway, she didn't know why Allie's ghost would come back and do this to her. It was as if she wanted revenge. But was that possible? Allie had been great the day they caught her dad in the car. Aria had fled around the corner and ran until she had to start walking. She kept walking all the way home, not sure what else to do with herself. Allie hugged her for a long time.
I won't tell, she whispered.
But the next day, the questions started. Do you know that girl? Is she a student? Is your dad going to tell your mom? Do you think he's doing it with lots of students? Usually, Aria could take Allie's inquisitiveness and even her teasing. She was okay with being the weird kid of the group. But this was different. This hurt. So the last few days of school, before she disappeared, Aria avoided Allison. She didn't send her "I'm bored" texts during health class or help her clean out her locker. And she certainly didn't talk about what happened. She was mad that Allie was prying, as if it was some celebrity gossip in Star and not her life. She was mad that Allie knew, period. Now, 3 years later, Aria wondered who she'd really been mad at. It wasn't really Allie. It was her dad.
Really, never mind,
Aria answered her father, who'd been waiting patiently, sipping his coffee.
I'm just sleepy.
Okay,
Byron answered incredulously. The doorbell rang. It wasn't the Green Day song, but their normal bong-bong chime. Her father looked up.
I wonder if that's for Mike,
he said.
Did you know that some girl from the Quaker school came by here at 8:30 looking for him?
I'll get it, Aria said. She tentatively pulled open the front door, but it was only Emily Fields on the other side, her reddish blonde hair messy and her eyes swollen.
Hey, Emily croaked.
Hey, Arya answered.
Emily puffed up her cheeks with air, her old nervous habit. She stood there for a moment. Then she said, I should go.
She started to turn.
Wait.
Arya caught her arm.
What? What's going on?
Emily paused.
Okay, but this is going to sound weird.
That's okay.
Arya's heart started to pound.
I was thinking about what you were saying yesterday at the party, about Allie. I was wondering, did Allie ever tell you guys something about me?
Emily said it very quietly. Arya pushed her hair out of her eyes.
What?
Arya whispered.
Recently?
Emily's eyes widened.
What do you mean, recently?
In 7th grade, Emily interrupted.
Did she tell you, like, something about me in 7th grade? Was she telling everybody?
Arya blinked.
At the party yesterday, when she'd seen Emily, she'd wanted more than anything to tell her about the texts.
No, Arya answered slowly. She never talked behind your back.
Oh.
Emily stared at the ground.
But she started.
I've been getting these, Arya said at the same time.
Then Emily looked past her and her eyes grew still.
Miss Emily Fields, hello!
Arya turned. In the living room stood Byron. At least he'd thrown on a striped bathrobe.
I haven't seen you in ages,
Byron boomed.
Yeah.
Emily puffed out her cheeks again. How are you, Mr. Montgomery?
He frowned.
Please, you're old enough to call me Byron.
He scratched his chin with the top edge of his coffee cup.
How's your life? Good?
Absolutely.
Emily looked like she was about to cry.
Do you need something to eat?
Byron asked.
You look hungry.
Oh, no. Thanks. I guess I didn't really sleep well.
You girls.
He shook his head.
You never sleep. I always tell Arya she needs 11 hours. She needs to bank sleep for when she gets to college and parties all night.
He began climbing the stairs to the 2nd floor. As soon as he was out of sight, Arya whirled back around. She started. But then she realized Emily was halfway across her lawn, on the way to her bike.
Hey, she called. Where are you going?
Emily picked her bike up off the ground.
I shouldn't have come.
Wait, come back. I need to talk to you, Arya called out. Emily paused and looked up. Arya felt all of her words swarming like bees in her mouth. Emily seemed terrified. But suddenly, Arya was too afraid to ask. How would she talk about the texts from A without mentioning her secret? She still didn't want anyone to know, especially with her mom just upstairs. Then she thought of Byron in his bathrobe and how uncomfortable Emily seemed around him just now. Emily had asked, "Did Allison tell you something about me in 7th grade? Why would she ask that? Unless... Arya bit her pinky nail. What if Emily already knew Arya's secret? Arya clamped her mouth shut, paralyzed. Emily shook her head.
I'll see you later, she mumbled,
and before Arya could compose herself, Emily was biking furiously away. 28. Brad and Angelina actually met at the Rosewood Police Station.
Ladies, discover yourselves.
As Oprah's audience clapped wildly, Hannah sank into her coffee-colored leather couch cushions, balancing the TiVo remote on her bare stomach. She could use a little self-discovery on this crisp Saturday morning. Last night was pretty blurry, like she'd gone through the night without her contacts in, and her head was throbbing. Had it involved some sort of animal? She'd found some empty candy wrappers in her purse. Had she eaten them? All of them? Her stomach hurt after all, and it looked a little puffy.
And why did she have a distinct memory of a Wawa dairy truck?
It felt like piecing together a puzzle, except Hannah was too impatient for puzzles. She always jammed pieces together that didn't actually fit. The doorbell rang. Hannah groaned, then rolled off the couch, not bothering to fix her army green ribbed tank top, which was turned around and practically exposing her boob. She cracked the oak door and then slammed it shut again.
Whoa. It was that cop, Mr. April, Darren Wilden.
Open up, Hannah.
She checked him out through the peephole. He stood with his arms crossed, seeming all business, but then his hair was a mess and she didn't see his gun anywhere.
And what kind of cop worked at 10 a.m. on a cloudless Saturday morning like this?
Hannah glanced at her reflection in the round mirror across the room.
Jesus.
Sleep marks from the pillow?
Yes.
Puffy eyes? Lips in need of gloss?
Absolutely.
She quickly ran her hands over her face, pushed her hair into a ponytail, and put on her round Chanel sunglasses. Then she flung open the door.
Hey, she said brightly. How are you?
Is your mom home?
He asked.
Nope,
Hannah said flirtatiously. She's out all morning. Wilden pursed his lips together, looking stressed. Hannah noticed Wilden had a little clear band-aid right above his eyebrow.
What, did your girlfriend deck you?
She asked, pointing at it.
No.
Wilden touched the band-aid.
I banged it on my medicine cabinet when I was washing my face.
He rolled his eyes.
I'm not the most graceful person in the morning.
Hannah smiled. Join the club. I fell on my ass last night. It was so random. Wilden's kind expression was suddenly grim.
Was that before or after you stole the car?
Hannah stood back.
What?
Why was Wilden looking at her as if she were the love child of space aliens?
There was an anonymous tip that you stole a car,
he enunciated slowly. Hannah's mouth fell open.
What?
A black BMW, belonging to a Mr. Edwin Ackard. You crashed it into a foam pole after you drank a bottle of Kettle One. Any of this sound familiar?
Hannah shoved her sunglasses up her nose.
Wait, that was what happened? I wasn't drunk last night, she lied.
We found a vodka bottle on the driver's side floor in the car,
Wilden said.
So, someone was drunk.
But,
Hannah started.
I have to bring you into the station,
Wilden interrupted, sounding a little disappointed.
I didn't steal it, Hannah squeaked. Sean, his son, said I could take it.
Wilden raised an eyebrow.
So you admit you were driving it?
Hannah started.
Shit. She took a step back into the house.
But my mom's not even here. She won't know what happened to me.
Embarrassingly, tears rushed to her eyes. She turned away, trying to get her shit together. Wilden shifted his weight uncomfortably. It seemed like he didn't know what to do with his hands. First he put them in his pockets, then they hovered near Hannah, then he wrung them together.
Listen, we can call your mom at the station, all right?
He said.
And I won't cuff you. And you can ride up front with me.
He walked back to his car and opened the passenger door for her. An hour later, she sat in the police station's same yellow plastic bucket seats, staring at the same Chester County's Most Wanted poster, fighting back the urge to start crying again. She'd just been given a blood test to see if she was still drunk from last night. Hannah wasn't sure if she was. Did alcohol stay in your body for that long? Now Wilden was hunching over his same desk, which held the same Bic pens and a metallic slinky. She pinched her palm with her fingernails and swallowed. Unfortunately, the events of last night had coalesced in her head. The Porsche, the deer, the airbag. Had Sean said she could take the car? She doubted it. The last thing she could remember was his little self-esteem speech before he'd ditched her in the woods.
Hey, were you at the Swarthmore Battle of the Bands last night?
A college-age guy with a buzz cut and a unibrow sat next to her. He wore a ripped flannel surfer shirt, paint-spattered jeans, and no shoes. His hands were cuffed. No, Hannah muttered. He leaned close to her, and Hannah could smell his beery breath.
Oh, I thought I saw you there. I was, and I drank too much and started terrorizing someone's cows. That's why I'm here. I was trespassing.
Good for you, she answered frostily.
What's your name?
He jingled his cuffs. Angelina. Like hell she was giving him her real name.
Hey, Angelina, he said. I'm Brad.
Hannah cracked a smile at how lame that line was. Just then, the station's front door opened. Hannah jerked back in her seat and pushed her sunglasses up her nose. Great. It was her mom.
I came as soon as I heard, Ms. Marin said to Wilden.
This morning, Ms. Marin wore a simple white boat-neck tee, low-waisted James jeans, Gucci slingbacks, and the exact same Chanel shades that Hannah was wearing. Her skin radiated. She'd been at the spa all morning, and her red gold hair was pulled back into a simple ponytail. Hannah squinted. Had her mom stuffed her bra? Her boobs looked like they belonged to someone else. I'll talk to her, Ms. Marin said to Wilden in a low voice. Then she walked over to Hannah. She smelled of seaweed body wrap. Hannah, certain that she smelled of Kettle One and Eggo waffles, tried to shrink in her seat.
I'm sorry, Hannah squeaked.
Did they make you take a blood test? She hissed. She nodded miserably.
What else did you tell them?
Nothing, she stuttered. Ms. Marin laced her French manicured hands together.
Okay, I'll handle this. Just be quiet.
What are you going to do? She whispered back. Are you going to call Sean's dad?
I said I'll handle it, Hannah.
Her mother rose up from the plastic bucket seats and leaned over Wilden's desk. Hannah tore through her purse for her emergency pack of Twizzlers pull and peel. She'd just have a couple, not the whole pack. It had to be in here somewhere. As she pulled out the Twizzlers, she felt her BlackBerry buzzing. Hannah hesitated. What if it was Sean, chewing her out via voicemail? What if it was Mona? Where the hell was Mona? Had they actually let her go to the golf tourney? She hadn't stolen the car, but she'd come along for the ride. That had to count for something. Her BlackBerry had a few missed calls. Sean, 6 times. Mona, twice, at 8 a.m. and 8:03. There were also some new text messages. A bunch from kids at the party, unrelated, and then one from a cell number she didn't know. Hannah's stomach knotted.
Hannah, remember the Kate toothbrush?
Thought so.
A. Hannah blinked. A cold, clammy sweat gathered on the back of her neck. She felt dizzy. The Kate toothbrush?
Come on, she said shakily, trying to laugh.
She glanced up at her mother, but she was still bent over Wilden's desk, talking. When she was in Annapolis, after her father told Hannah that she was, essentially, a pig, Hannah shot up from the table and ran inside. She ducked into the powder room, shut the door, and sat down on the toilet. She took deep breaths, trying to calm down. Why couldn't she be beautiful and graceful and perfect like Allie or Kate? Why did she have to be who she was, dumpy and clumsy and a wreck? And she wasn't sure who she was angriest at. Her dad, Kate, herself, or Allison? As Hannah choked on hot, angry tears, she noticed the 3 framed pictures on the wall across from the toilet. All 3 were close-ups of someone's eyes. She recognized her father's squinty, expressive eyes right away. And there were Isabel's small, almond-shaped ones. The 3rd pair of eyes were large, intoxicating.
They looked like they were straight out of a Chanel mascara ad.
They were obviously Kate's.
They were all watching her. Hannah stared at herself in the mirror. A peal of laughter floated in from outside. Her stomach felt like it was bursting from all the popcorn everyone had watched her eat. She felt so sick, she just wanted it out of there. But when she leaned over the toilet, nothing happened. Tears spilled down her cheeks. As she reached for a Kleenex, she noticed a green toothbrush sitting in a little porcelain cup. It gave her an idea. It took her 10 minutes to work up the nerve to put it into her throat, but when she did, she felt worse, but also better. She started crying even harder, but she also wanted to do it again. As she eased the toothbrush back in her mouth, the bathroom door burst open. It was Allison. Her eyes swept over Hannah kneeling on the floor, the toothbrush in her hand.
"Whoa," she said.
"Please go away," Hannah whispered. Allison took a step into the bathroom.
"Do you want to talk about it?"
Hannah looked at her desperately.
"At least close the door."
Allie shut the door and sat on the side of the tub.
"How long have you been doing this for?"
Hannah's lip quivered.
"Doing what?"
Allie paused, looking at the toothbrush. Her eyes widened. Hannah looked at it too. She hadn't noticed before, but Kate was printed on the side in white letters. A phone rang loudly in the police station and Hannah flinched. Remember the Kate toothbrush? Someone else might have known about Hannah's eating problem, or might have seen her going into the police station, or might even know about Kate. But the green toothbrush? There was only one person who knew about that. Hannah liked to believe that if Allie were alive, she'd be rooting for her now that her life was so perfect. That was the scene she replayed in her mind constantly. Allie impressed by her size 2 jeans. Allie oohing over her Chanel lip gloss. Allie congratulating Hannah on how she'd planned the perfect pool party. With shaking hands, Hannah typed, "Is this Allison?"
"Wilden," a cop shouted. "We need you in the back."
Hannah looked up. Darren Wilden rose from his desk, excusing himself from Hannah's mom. Within seconds, the whole precinct burst into action. A cop car flew out of the parking lot. 3 more followed. Phones rang maniacally. 4 cops sprinted through the room.
"It looks like something big," said Brad,
the drunk trespasser sitting next to her. Hannah flinched. She'd forgotten he was there.
"A donut shortage?"
she asked, trying to laugh.
"Bigger."
He jiggled his handcuffed hands excitedly.
"Looks like something very big."
29. Good morning. We hate you. The sun streamed in through the barn's window, and for the first time in Spencer's life, she was awakened by the chirping of high-on-life sparrows instead of the frightening 90s techno mix her dad blasted from the main house's exercise room. But could she enjoy it? Nope. Although she hadn't drunk a drop last night, her body felt achy, chilled, and hungover. There was zero sleep in her fuel tank. After Wren left, she'd tried to sleep, but her mind spun. The way Wren held her felt so different. Spencer had never felt anything remotely like that before. But then that I am, and Melissa's calm, spooky expression. And as the night wore on, the barn creaked and groaned, and Spencer pulled the covers up to her nose, shaking. She chided herself for feeling paranoid and immature, but she couldn't help it. She kept thinking of the possibilities. Eventually, she'd gotten up and rebooted her computer. For a few hours, she searched the internet. First, she looked at technical websites, searching for answers on how to trace IMs. No luck. Then she tried to find where that first email, the one titled Covet, had come from. She wanted, desperately, for the trail to end at Andrew Campbell. She found that Andrew had a blog,
but after scouring the whole thing, she found nothing. The entries were all about the books Andrew liked to read. Dorky boy philosophizing. A couple of melancholy passages about an unrequited crush on some girl he never named. She thought he might slip up and give himself away, but he didn't. Finally, she plugged in the keywords missing persons and Allison De Laurentiis. She found the same stuff from 3 years ago. The reports on CNN and in the Philadelphia Inquirer, search groups, and kooky sites, like one showing what Allie might look like with different hairstyles. Spencer stared at the school picture they'd used. She hadn't seen a photo of Allie in a long time. Would she recognize Allie if she had, for instance, a short black bob? She certainly looked different in this picture they'd created. The main house's screen door squeaked as she nervously pushed through it. Inside, she smelled freshly brewed coffee, which was odd, because usually her mom was already at the stables by now, and her dad was riding or at the golf course.